Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, August 10th, 2020. Coming up this hour,
President Trump pushes to unilaterally extend stimulus measures.
Democratic state leaders cry foul, firing back on the White House orders.
Stimulus action from Congress remains stalled as disagreement on state aid takes center stage.
And U.S. coronavirus cases top 5 million as concerns surface about a third wave.
Thousands in the tri-state area are still without power nearly a week after Tropical Storm Isaias, plus a new low with COVID-19 cases for New York State. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Mets won, the Yankees lost, and 23-year-old Colin Morikawa emerged from the pack and won the PGA Championship.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good Monday morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak is being brought to you by SEI. Today's competitive marketplace requires asset managers to become more operationally adept. See how you can transform your business with SEI's global platform at seic.com/IMS.
And U.S. futures are struggling for direction to start the week. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are higher by 4.5 points. Dow futures up 97. NASDAQ futures down 8 points. DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. CAC in Paris is little changed to higher. The 10-year is little changed as well. The yield on a 10-year note, 0.56%. 2-year Treasury yield, 0.12%. NYMEX crude oil is higher by 1.6% or 66 cents at $41.89 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.7%, up $14.20 at $2,042.20 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1769 against the dollar, and the yen is at 105.98. John.
And Nathan, we begin with President Trump's push to unilaterally extend stimulus measures. His executive orders would provide $400 a week to out-of-work Americans. 300 of that comes from federal funds, while 100 would come from states.
We've gotten much of what we've wanted without having to give up anything. And that's very good. You can't beat that.
The president also seeking to defer payroll taxes through the end of the year for workers earning less than $8,000 a month. That could give extra cash to employees, but won't help to workers who've lost their jobs. Goldman Sachs expects the orders could force Congress to reach a more concrete stimulus deal by September. So does the president.
Nancy Pelosi wants to call and she wants to see if she can do something, but they're much more inclined to make a deal now than they would have been 2 days ago.
The exact impact of deferring payroll taxes is also in question. It hinges on whether employers will stop withholding the money from paychecks. If they do, voters would likely pressure Congress to back the measure with legislation. If lawmakers don't, Americans could owe that money back to the government at the end of the year.
And now Democratic state leaders are pushing back against the president's plan.
You can't now say to states who have no funding, and you have to pay 25% of the unemployment insurance cost.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says it's impossible for states to pay that amount. So does Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. There are also questions about the legality of the president's orders. White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow addressed that issue on ABC's This Week, heard on Bloomberg Radio.
Maybe we're going to go to court on them. We're going to go ahead with our actions anyway. Our counsel's office, the Treasury Department believes it has the authority to temporarily suspend tax collections. So we're banking on that.
The executive orders will likely face litigation over core constitutional principles like the separation of powers, plus lawsuits from landlords seeking to stop a measure to prevent evictions.
Still, the president hopes it will push lawmakers to reach a deal. Now we wait and see.
Right now, we need to come to agreement. We've got to meet halfway. We've got to do the best we can. for the American people. But that what they're putting forth does not meet that standard.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi made her case on Fox News Sunday, heard on Bloomberg Radio. So did Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin.
We've said let's pass legislation on the things we agree on and knock these off one at a time. And they've refused to do that until they get their $1 trillion for the states.
Still, Mnuchin says he's willing to listen to proposals from Democrats. So far, there's no word on whether talks are scheduled for today.
In the meantime, the coronavirus outbreak shows no signs of slowing. U.S. cases have now passed 5 million, with the last million of those coming in just 2 weeks. Now, former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb is warning of a third wave of infections, this time in rural areas.
The concern now is that this has become so pervasive across the country that it could start to infect more rural communities that have but largely been untouched to date and probably are a little bit more complacent because they have been untouched, but are still very vulnerable because the infection hasn't been there.
Gottlieb was on Face the Nation from CBS, heard on Bloomberg Radio. He says infections are already spreading in the Midwest and could be harder to control in rural areas.
And meantime, in California, health officials warn of a dramatic increase in cases as a backlog is cleared out. Here with more is Ed Baxter from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
The state has been experiencing a technical glitch. There was possibly 300,000 records unreported. HHS Secretary Dr. Mark Galli says he expects the system to be fully caught up in the next couple of days, then a bit of time to quantify them. Now, this hasn't affected the hospitalization numbers, so there is a very stark real number regarding ICU caseload. Almost a third of California's load are ICU patients, highest in more than a month. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Ed. Worldwide, Taiwan is one of the biggest success stories in fighting the pandemic. Health Secretary Alex Azar is in the country today praising its response to the virus.
It's a true honor to be here to convey a message of strong support and friendship from President Trump to Taiwan.
It's the most senior visit to the country by a U.S. official in more than 40 years and is sure to anger China. In his remarks, Azar called democracy in Taiwan an inspiration to the world.
At the same time, China is hitting back against U.S. sanctions this morning. Beijing says it will retaliate with sanctions of its own against 11 Americans. Senators Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz are among those being targeted. It comes after the U.S. placed sanctions on 11 Chinese officials and their allies on Friday, including Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam. Right now, S&P futures, they're 6 points higher. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. First 5:07 on Wall Street. Let's get news from around the world this morning. And we say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
John, thank you very much. Con Edison says it is offering up to $500 for people who lost food after last week's power outage from Tropical Storm Isaias. Some people are still in the dark from the storm, and frustrations are growing with utilities. This man on Long Island says PSE&G continually changes the date, and he should expect to have his power restored when.
Call, I get a recording that says they'll be here Monday night at 11:30 p.m.
At its peak, Isaias knocked out power to more than 2.5 million customers in the tri-state area, with about 200,000 still in the dark. And what's worse, today is forecast to be another hot day. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state reported its lowest one-day positive rate since the start of the pandemic. Cuomo says there was only 0.78% testing positive. COVID-19 cases have jumped 40% in late July among kids. That's according to a report from the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association. Less than 9% of all infections in the U.S. are with children. A Georgia school district has announced it will go completely remote. North Paulding High School, the school noted for its overcrowded photo amid the pandemic, has suspended its in-classroom learning. School officials have revoked the suspension of Hannah Waters, the teen who took the photo.
We could have delayed school so they could find more safety measures to follow in the school, and they could have found more plans for all the students and teachers and staff members, but they kind of just sent us into school and used us as guinea pigs to see what would happen later on.
U.S. intelligence officials believe that Russia is using a variety of measures to denigrate Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden ahead of the November election, and that individuals linked to the Kremlin are boosting President Trump's reelection bid. On CNN's State of the Union, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said it's a repeat of the 2016 election.
They need to tell the American people more. The American people, I believe, think they should decide who the President of the United States is, not Vladimir Putin making that decision for us.
Pelosi says Russia is actively 24/7 interfering in our election. Election officials in Belarus say the country's longtime authoritarian leader, Alexander Lukashenko, has won his sixth consecutive presidential term, taking over 80% of the votes. Officials released preliminary results of Sunday's election that resulted in mass protests all over Belarus and violent crackdowns on the demonstrators. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 5:10 on Wall Street. Time now for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. And good Monday morning, John Stashower.
All right, John, first golf major in 13 months. Thrilling final round of the PGA Championship in San Francisco. Down the stretch at one point, there was a seven-way tie for the lead. A youngster then went in front by himself.
Colin Morikawa from the front of the green. The chip, and it's in. Colin Morikawa with the chip from the front. It's a birdie. At 14, he's 11 under par for the championship.
That's Kevin Kugler. Westwood One is heard here on Bloomberg Radio. Two holes later, the 23-year-old Morikawa drove the green on a par four, and his eagle extended his lead. He won by two shots at the same age that Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods won their first PGA championships. Morikawa's playing in a major for just the second time. Not a good road trip for the Yankees. They went 2-5. They had a 3-0 seventh inning lead at Tampa Bay. James Paxton was working on a shutout. Back-to-back home runs for the Rays tied the game. They had a walk-off 4-3 win, scoring in the ninth off Zach Britton. Yanks stranded nine runners, just a two-game lead now in the AL East. They've got today off. The Mets won a series for the first time. They cooled off the Marlins, winning 4-2 at Citi Field. Jacob deGrom went five innings, is now 2-0. The bullpen outstanding with four relievers working four scoreless innings and allowing just two hits. And rookie Andrés Giménez had three hits at the plate and scored three times. For the Mets, another St. Louis Cardinals series, this one against the Pirates, postponed due to a COVID outbreak on the team. Cardinals have yet to play a game in August. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks a lot, John. And just ahead, we'll speak with economist Dennis Garpin on his call on gold. This is Bloomberg. And the sports report was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. European stocks and U.S. equity futures a little changed after China said it would sanction U.S. officials in retaliation over Hong Kong. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are higher by 6 points. Dow futures up 115. NASDAQ futures a little changed, down just 1 point. The 10-year is up 2/32, yield 0.55%. Two-year Treasury yield 0.12%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1 2/3%, up 69 cents at $41.91 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.75%, up $15.40 at $20.43.40 an ounce. The euro is at 1.770 against the dollar. The yen at 105.93. At 10 a.m. Wall Street time, we get Jolt's job openings for the month of June. And Marriott and Royal Caribbean are among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump's plan to extend additional unemployment benefits requires states to provide 25% of the funds, and it's unclear whether states have the money or will be able to do it. Trump issued an executive order Saturday to provide an additional $400 a week in benefits after Congress failed to extend a $600 weekly benefit. But Trump's plan requires states to kick in $100 a week, and many states are already suffering budget woes related to the coronavirus. In baseball, the Yankees lost, the Mets won, the Orioles beat the Nationals 5-2, the Giants lost, the A's beat the Astros 7-2 after a bench-clearing brawl. In the NBA, the Nets and Celtics won, the Wizards lost. In the NHL, the Capitals beat the Bruins 2-1. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. John.
And Michael, thank you. 520 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. It's been one of the great investment calls of recent memory. And the man behind that call is with us this morning, I'm happy to say, economist Dennis Gartman. Dennis, the momentum, is it still behind gold?
Well, it's still a bull market in gold. It's been a bull market for several years. I've been very bullish of the gold market for that period of time. But I'm on the sidelines at this point just because the public is so heavily involved. It has moved to the front pages of the newspapers, front pages of every business magazine. The fact that the boat has become a little overcrowded finds me on the sidelines for the first time in a while. I've always said that in any bull market, whether it's in stocks, bonds, soybeans, corn, cotton, or gold, there are only three positions one can have: really long, modestly long, or neutral. And I think at this point, being neutral is probably the best place. You can't be short of gold. The monetary authorities around the world are still being expansionary. They're going to continue to be expansionary for years into the future. The major long-term trend is from the lower left to the upper right in gold. But for the short term, I'm on the sidelines. And I'm taking a bit of heat because I'm on the sidelines. The gold bugs think the only thing you should always be is forever and always long bullish of gold. I think there are times when one should be neutral. This is one of those times.
And in your bunker as well with freeze-dried food. As the value of the U.S. dollar moves lower, the gold tends to appreciate because it becomes cheaper in other currencies. And that linkage is still there.
Oh, yeah, that linkage is still there. And for a long period of time, I was bullish of gold in euro terms only. Well, actually, euro terms and yen terms, as the dollar was extraordinarily strong. But it's abundantly clear that with the United States erring upon the side of trade protection and with concerns over the political environment here in the United States, suddenly the dollar has been, I shouldn't say suddenly, over the course of the past several months, the dollar has come under pressure, probably shall remain under pressure. And if I'm going to do the next trade, I'll be bearish of the dollar. Right now, as in gold, I'm on the sidelines. But on balance, a weak dollar gives way to stronger gold prices in dollar terms. And where I had been bullish of gold in euro and yen terms, now I'm bullish of gold when I trade in dollar terms only.
Now, explain to us the difference in the dollar as opposed to any other currencies. Take, for instance, the euro. Does it? How much of this relates to the pandemic if Europe is doing better right now than the United States?
I think that's clearly one of the incumbent factors in keeping the euro strong, the dollar weak. Plus the fact that I think international money is fearful of the United States erring always and everywhere in the past several months upon the idea of being trade protectionist. The United States imposed trade tariffs, for example, on Canadian aluminum. Silly notion, stupid idea. Why you pick on the United States' best ally and our closest neighbor makes absolutely no sense, and I think on balance that allows international money to err upon the side of being bearish of the dollar. It worries about that sort of circumstance prevailing again and again and again. So I think on balance, if one has to trade, one should trade short of the U.S. dollar. If one doesn't have to trade, one should be on the sidelines for just a few days.
I pulled up a chart here, and you could do this with an annotation on the Bloomberg of the S&P 500 from its low in March 23rd, to Friday's close. S&P 500 right now is up 50%. Does that say toppy to you?
It says toppy to me. I look at fear and greed indicators to tell me whether one should be bullish or bearish, and I find the CNN fear and greed index, which when it gets above 70 is always makes one reticent about being a buyer. It reached 72 on Friday. I think that's a very high number. If it turns down, that's usually very difficult. It's very difficult for stock prices to sustain a rally, so that makes me somewhat suspicious. Citigroup has the market sentiment index, which when it's now at the highest levels in almost 2 or 3 years. So I think there's too many people on the, again, as there's too many people bullish of gold, there's too many people that have been bullish of the stock market. And the fact that the NASDAQ on Friday gave up the ghost, a very serious decline in value, that had been the leader. And as I always say, when the generals get taken out and shot, the sergeants and the corporals run away in fear and in agony, and they took the generals out. The apples, the high tech stocks that have led the way higher, they took them out and shot them on Friday. So I think you have to be very careful about being bullish of stocks at this level.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot. Stay with us because Dennis is coming up in the next half hour for a second part of this interview. Dennis Gartman, economist. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, Dow futures right now, they are higher up 109 points. That's 0.4% rise. S&P 500 futures right now, they're up 6 points. That's up 0.2%. Just mentioning tech, the tech-heavy NASDAQ index right now, it is in the red, down only 1 point. And as we look at treasuries right now, the 10-year yield, 0.55, 55 basis points. The 2-year, 12 basis points right now. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special lease and finance offers. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning, I'm John Tucker. And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures right now, they are mixed. S&P futures are up 6 points. This comes after a push from President Trump to unilaterally extend stimulus measures. His executive orders would provide $400 a week to out-of-work Americans and look to defer payroll taxes through the end of the year.
We've got much of what we've wanted without having to give up anything. And that's very good. You can't beat that.
And Goldman Sachs says the president's orders could force Congress to reach a more concrete stimulus deal by September, but the two sides remain far apart.
We've got to meet halfway. We've got to do the best we can for the American people. But that what they're putting forth does not meet that standard.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi made her case on Fox News Sunday, heard on Bloomberg Radio. So did Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin.
We've said let's pass legislation on the things we agree on and knock these off one at a time. And they've refused to do that until they get their $1 trillion for the states.
So far, there's no word on whether talks will resume today.
Meantime, the coronavirus outbreak shows no signs of slowing. U.S. cases have now passed 5 million, with the last million of those coming in just 2 weeks. And now former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb is warning about third wave infections, this time in rural areas.
It could start to infect more rural communities that have largely been untouched to date and probably are a little bit more complacent because they have been untouched.
Gottlieb was on Face the Nation from CBS, heard right here on Bloomberg Radio. He says infections are already spreading in the Midwest and could be harder to control in those rural areas.
Well, worldwide, Taiwan is one of the biggest success stories in fighting the pandemic. Health Secretary Alex Azar is in the country today praising its response to the virus.
President Tsai's courage and vision in leading Taiwan's vibrant democracy are an inspiration to the region and to the world.
This is the most senior visit to the country by a U.S. official in more than 40 years and is sure to anger China.
At the same time, China is hitting back against U.S. sanctions this morning. Beijing says it will retaliate with sanctions of its own against 11 Americans. Senators Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz are among those being targeted. It comes after the U.S. placed sanctions on 11 Chinese officials and their allies on Friday, including Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam.
S&P futures higher by 5 points right now. Dow futures up 98. NASDAQ futures are lower by 5 points. 10-year Treasury yield 0.55%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
We're at 5:33 on Wall Street, and let's get news from around the world this morning. We say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
John, thank you very much. In New York, frustrations continue to grow as tens of thousands of residents say they are still in the dark after Tropical Storm Isaias knocked out their power almost a week ago. Cardiologist Andrew Latucci, who lives on Long Island, believes PSE&G should have been up front with utility customers instead of stringing them along day by day with false expectations.
We actually had crew that came by yesterday, and they promised it was going to be done today. Then apparently the crew was reassigned.
At its height, 2.5 million customers were in the dark in the tri-state area. The state attorney general is now demanding answers. Meanwhile, Con Edison says we'll offer up to $500 to reimburse people who lost food due to spoilage. Democratic nominee Joe Biden leads President Donald Trump in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, two states won by the Republican in 2016 on the way to the White House. According to a CBS poll, Biden is up 6 points in each state, 48% to 42% in Wisconsin and 49 to 43 in Pennsylvania. By a wide margin, voters surveyed said things in America are going badly, and Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic was a major issue. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the threats of interference in the U.S. presidential election from Russia and China are not equal. She's pointing to a more serious risk with Russia's efforts to boost President Trump's reelection bid. Pelosi spoke to CNN State of the Union.
Russia is actively 24/7 interfering in our election. They did so in 2016, and they are doing so now.
Pelosi was addressing an intelligence report last week that said Russia was already using a range of measures to undercut Joe Biden. For a second day, public anger erupted in Lebanon after last week's massive explosion from thousands of tons of stored ammonium nitrate. Thousands of protesters gathered outside Lebanon's parliament building in Beirut, hurling rocks at security forces who have been responding with tear gas. About 160 people were killed and 6,000 were injured. Meanwhile, just before leaving Morristown, New Jersey last night, President Trump says he has spoken with Lebanon officials and pledged America's help.
We have three planes going over loaded up with medical supplies, food and water. We'll be sending additional planes.
Lebanon's prime minister says the only solution to save the country was to hold early elections. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 5:36 on Wall Street. And it's time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. Yeah, good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, John. A star is born in the game of golf. Colin Morikawa, only 23 years old, turned pro last year. Already a couple of tour victories. And yesterday, the Vegas native who played college golf at Cal Berkeley was back in the Bay Area for the PGA Championship. He was part of a seven-way tie for the lead. He went ahead with a chip-in for birdie on the 14th hole. And then on 16, Morikawa drove the green on a par four and completed the eagle.
Starts the putter back. Slow roll toward the hole. It's in. All the volunteers have gathered around the 16th green as Colin Morikawa, driver to 7 feet, 7 foot putt for eagle. He is at 13 under par for the championship with a two shot lead and two holes to go.
Kevin Kugler with Carl Westwood One is heard here on Bloomberg Radio. Morikawa won the first major played since last July's British Open. Yankees lost 3-4 at Tampa Bay. They were up 3-0 seventh inning. The Rays rallied, hit back-to-back home runs off James Paxton to tie the game, and then scored bottom of the ninth off Zach Britton to win 4-3. At Citi Field, Mets beat the Marlins 4-2. Jacob deGrom now 2-0, went 5 innings. Bullpen very sharp after that. Hottest team in baseball continues to be the Oakland A's, 9-0 in August. 7-2 win over Houston, a game that included the benches clearing. Oakland's Ramon Laureano got hit with a pitch three times in the series, charged the mound. Another week to go in the NBA regular season. Stanley Cup playoffs first round starts tomorrow. Islanders will play Washington Wednesday afternoon. Columbus won the last game of the qualifying round, advancing by shutting out Toronto 3-0. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports.
All right, John, thanks a lot. It is now 5:37 on Wall Street, and it's time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here with that is Bloomberg's Ed Khoury.
Rental inventory in Manhattan is surging, and the number of lease signings is plummeting, but that's not stopping a new rental building in East Harlem from opening in September. David Blumenfeld, vice president of the Blumenfeld Development Group, which owns the project, expects every unit to be rented within a year. City dwellers are clamoring to find getaway homes in the Mystic, Connecticut area. Mystic is the seaside village best known as the humble working-class town in the 1988 Julia Roberts movie Mystic Pizza. It may not have the prestige of those other New England resorts or the party scene of the Hamptons, but apparently that's the attraction. New Jersey-based Greenville Colorants is being sold to an Ohio firm, Chromascape. Makes pigments, colorants, and additives at manufacturing facilities in Arizona, Kentucky, and Texas. It says the purchase will add a portfolio of more than 2,000 products. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Khoury.
All right, thanks. At 5:39 on Wall Street, Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. And let's check in with our global news team now for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk, and on WFLA in Tampa Bay, we're looking at what converting vacant mall anchor stores into Amazon fulfillment centers could mean to Florida retail real estate.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WHAM 1180 in Rochester, New York, I'm reporting that a first-of-its-kind government loan for Kodak is on hold pending investigations into allegations of wrongdoing.
I'm Caroline Hepke here in London, where we're reporting on a survey showing one in three UK employers expect to cut jobs this quarter.
I'm Jeff Bellinger, and on Pogo in San Diego, I'm talking about a report that Qualcomm is lobbying for the right to sell chips for Huawei 5G phones.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Berkshire Hathaway spent a record $5.1 billion on buybacks.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Well, coming up today, earnings will provide a closer look at how the pandemic has impacted the travel industry. Here with more is Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky.
We'll hear today from hotel giant Marriott as well as cruise operator Royal Caribbean. As of mid-May, one quarter of Marriott's hotels were closed due to the pandemic. Occupancy at those that remain open is down sharply. Analysts are forecasting a loss of 42 cents a share. Royal Caribbean is also expected to sink into the red. Revenue is expected to be down 96% from last year, with cruise operations suspended for the entire quarter. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, Dow futures right now 100 points higher. S&P futures, there are five. The NASDAQ futures down 6 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. The sports report was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Nathan Hager. This update is brought to you by SEI. Today's competitive marketplace requires asset managers to become more operationally adept. To see how you can transform your business with SEI's global platform at SEIC.com/IMS. European stocks and U.S. equity futures a little changed after China said it would sanction U.S. officials in retaliation over Hong Kong. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are higher by 5 points. Dow futures up 98. NASDAQ futures down 5. 10 years up 3/32, yield 0.55%, 2-year treasury yield 0.12%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.4%, up 59 cents, $41.81 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.7%, up $14.20 at 20.42.20 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1759 against the dollar, and the yen is at 106 even. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. With millions of unemployed Americans beginning their week waiting for the latest round of coronavirus relief, President Trump's surprise executive action left many questioning how that money is going to reach those who need it. The president, bypassing Congress over the weekend, signed an executive order that unilaterally restores unemployment benefits to millions but slashes the weekly checks to $400 while also requesting states share the cost already strapped for cash. Authorities in Portland, Oregon again declared a riot last night after protesters over the death of George Floyd marched a union building, blocked the road, and set dumpster fires. In baseball, the Yankees lost, the Mets won, the Orioles beat the Nationals 5-2, the Giants lost, the A's beat the Astros 7-2 after a bench-clearing brawl. In the NBA, the Nets and Celtics won, the Wizards lost, NHL action, the Capitals beat the Bruins 2-1. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, this is Bloomberg. John.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 5:49 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. You heard Michael just say that it's an impasse in Washington on the stimulus front. Executive orders also of some questionable legal authority. We're joined once again for his take on all of this by economist Dennis Gartman. Dennis, on the stimulus front, what are the range of possible outcomes as you see it and the implications for the U.S. economy?
Well, I think the president had no choice. I'm not a great fan of the president. He's done some things that I found to be deleterious to the economy, including tariffs, but I think he was really pushed into a position where he had no choice but to make an executive decision and impose this $400 tax reduction, let's call it that, because that's what he's talking about, reducing the payroll tax. Congress left him in a quandary. He had no choice. He had to do what he had to do. Congress has to come back into session. They have to come back and reintroduce the same sort of events that they had previously, but they have to cut it from $600 to $400. Giving people at $600 a week was an incentive not to go to work. $400 is at least a payment to keep the economy stabilized. We have no choice. We have to remain as stimulative as we can be without being without giving people an incentive not to go to work. So the president did what he had to do. Wasn't quite what everybody would like to see. Yes, there will be legal circumstances that might prevent him from doing it, and yes, the states are going to be strapped for cash, but he had no choice.
Yeah, that's interesting that you said that it kept some people from rejoining the workforce. Anecdotally, hearing more and more of that. The rebound in the unemployment rate owes much to what the Bureau of Labor Statistics probably would say is overcounting. Also, a large number of people leaving the workforce, meaning that they're no longer looking for work. What's the real picture, do you suppose, that's out there?
I think it's far worse than people want to anticipate, and I think it's going to get worse again. There's no question we've had a rebound from the lows that were precipitated by the pandemic in March and April and May. We're doing better now than we were, but do I think that the economy is going to suddenly make continue a V-shaped return? No, I think not. I think it's going to be, as I've said for a long period of time, a W-shaped return, with each leg of the extended W being less than the previous one. This is a global circumstance. This is not just a national circumstance. Everybody understands that, but I think we're now becoming inured to the benefits that might accrue from fiscal stimulus and worried about the long-term impact. I think it's going to be years before we have the global economy back to where it was February and March of this year before the panic really became serious. And I think it's going to be a long period of time before we have any return to the restaurants, air travel, hotels, that sort of thing. And it's going to be a longer period of time before people get used to buying the same number of automobiles that we've had in the past. So I'm fearful that this is a long-term circumstance. This is a change in the global environment that's going to be years, maybe even a decade to overcome. I'm really not all that optimistic. It's sad to say, I'd rather be an optimist than a pessimist, but I'm at this point somewhat distraught by what's going on.
And each week we see this parade of headlines about this company, this well-known company, filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Then there are the lesser-known companies also filing or becoming completely insolvent. Can you gauge the risk for us of a secondary economic crisis, maybe driven by insolvency?
Well, I think, for example, a friend of mine who's been in the restaurant business in New York for years and years has said long ago that we probably had 25 to 30% too many restaurants in the United States, and we're probably not going to see those 25 to 30% of the restaurants that were overstaffed become restaffed. I think they're going out of business. The same with retail. That's going to change. So this is going to take a long period of time. We will be fine 10 years from now. We'll be fine 5 years from now. Will we be fine 2 years from now? I have my very serious doubts. And nonetheless, the monetary authorities have to do what they can, when they can, and how they can to keep things intact. That has no choice. So the problem shall be, I think we're going to be surprised to see how high the levels of inflation shall be a year, 2 years, and 3 years from now. Take a gander at what's happened in the lumber market, for example.
Yeah, you know what? I actually went to the lumber yard over the week. It felt like I got hit over the head by a 2x4 when I checked out the prices.
It's astonishing. The lumber futures have tripled from the low in March. And if you talk to anybody who's in the home building business or the home renovation business, they cannot find lumber at any reasonable price. That is going to be a deterrent. One of the things that has given people a sense of optimism was the rebound in housing and the rebound in home improvements. That may be shuttered simply because you can't get lumber, and what lumber you can get has tripled in value. It's very extraordinary.
Okay, so inflation is out there. Is that a result of supply chain issues or what?
Well, I think it's a result of what has been happening with the monetary authorities. You cannot expand the supply of reserves in the system as dramatically as everyone has. And it's not just been the Fed. It's been the Bank of Canada. It's been the Bank of England. It's been the ECB. It's been the Bank of Japan. It's been the People's Bank of China. It's been the Bank of Russia. All the monetary authorities everywhere have been expansionary. They have no reason to continue to stop that expansionary policy. And then at the end, that has to be inflationary. It cannot be otherwise.
And it's also supportive of, well, at least equities.
Money has been flowing. If it hasn't gone into the economy, it's gone into the stock market, and I think that's been the driving force behind stocks. If you get any rebound in the economy, if we start to see GDP doing somewhat better, money that had been going into the stock market will have to go into the economy, and I think that that's one of the reasons why I find myself betting against the stock market continuing to advance from these levels. I find the stock prices, this 50% rebound from the March lows, egregious, almost comical in nature.
And at the first hint that central banks are going to pull back on asset purchases, that's going to be a huge negative.
That's not going to happen for a long period of time in the future. As Mr. Powell said, they haven't even begun to think about thinking about tightening monetary policy. I thought that was a very important statement. We haven't even begun to think about thinking about it.
And while equities may be toppy in your opinion, what about bonds at this point?
I think bonds are very toppy. What's the propensity? As I've always said for years and years, all economics is a study of people's propensity to do something. And what is your propensity to put money to work for the United States government, even though you may find yourself in the short run putting money into the bond market just for fear factor? What's your propensity to put money to the United States government at 30-year for the 30-year bond at a 1.5% yield? I think it's relatively negligible. I think it's non-existent. And the only thing that keeps the bond market higher is the fear factor. I think that eventually shall ameliorate. I think eventually yields at the long end go above 2.5%, 3%, maybe two to 3 years from now. And I'm terribly bearish on the bond market. I think you had a very difficult technical event that occurred last week. And for my own account, I'm short the long end of the curve, and my intention is to add to it when I'm profitable.
You're not buying bonds. Well, you're on the sideline for gold right now, and equities are toppy. Are you putting this under your mattress?
I'm putting it in cash and leaving it there for right now. The vast majority of my money is in cash, and I think that's the proper place to be. I wish that I had participated in the bull market in stocks as some other people have. But the fact that we, as I said earlier, the fact that we've got the CNN Fear and Greed Index above 70 and turning lower, the fact that Citicorp's index of euphoria has reached new highs, the fact that you've got the who's the young man who's on radio all television all the time now that was the gambling bettor.
you've stumped me. I only listen to Bloomberg.
Blank, but he's in the market touting people to be that stocks only go higher. The public is in, and as Joseph Kennedy once said, when the shoe clerks are in, I think the time to go to the sidelines is upon us, and I think that's that time. So, yes, okay. I'm in cash and comfortable there.
Dennis, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Economist Dennis Gartman with us for a lengthy interview this morning. Thanks a lot, Dennis. And futures right now, the stock futures. Right now, Dow futures up 107 points. S&P 500 futures, they are 6 points higher. The NASDAQ E-mini futures, 2 points lower. The 10-year yield right now, 55 basis points. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.